And hello again, I'm Steve Martin. You're listening to Unreal Bluegrass. My guest in the second hour of the program is Eric Gibson. We're going to talk about the Gibson Brothers' latest album, Darkest Hour. There's always a lot of great stuff to discuss with Eric. The band is just hitting on all cylinders right now, combining everything they've done into this wonderful album, first one since 2018. We're going to start this portion of the program off with a tune, What a Difference a Day Makes, and then we'll get right into our discussion with Eric Gibson. You will enjoy it, I promise. Thanks so much for tuning in. To the audience of Unreal Bluegrass, you just heard a cut from a brand new album. The album is from the Gibson Brothers. The title is Darkest Hour. What you just heard was What a Difference a Day Makes. And on the phone I have one of my favorite guests, Eric Gibson.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
How are you doing? It's always good to chat with you. And I feel like it's been longer than it maybe has, because in reality it has been a while.
Yeah, it has been. I don't believe that we've chatted since the pandemic, have we?
Well, no, we haven't. We talked about Mockingbird. And then not since then. I saw you do what I call the Mockingbird set with that band at Grey Fox right after that. And then the pandemic came in, and then I've just not been where you are. You haven't been where I am. So I think that's it. I think that would be the last time around that time, because that was, 2018. So not too much after that, we were all shutting down everywhere. So
yes,
it's been a while. Yeah. It's always fun to talk to you. The album is... I'll tell the audience listening, has it been released yet?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, it came out in early in 2023.
Okay, good. I have it, and I have an album by your son, which we will give a little bit of a nod to, The Keeping Kind by Kelly John Gibson. I've been playing cuts from that. He also gets a co-write on this Darkest Hour album with one of my favorite songs, Dust.
Thank you. Yeah, he just loves writing, and he inspires me to write. And we've written a lot of songs together.
Oh, good.
I don't think too many days go by that he doesn't at least, you know, have a title or a new melody. Mm-hmm. He's always writing, and we've actually, the Gibson Brothers have cut two of his songs. We did one on our In the Ground album also that he wrote with my brother. But he's on fire for it right now. He's in his 20s, and he just loves it.
Everything to him is like, that's a song.
He's paying attention to what. He just went on a trip with us out to Michigan, and he was really quiet, and I was trying to visit with him, and he finally said, Dad, I'm trying to write this. I got a song in my head. I'm trying to think about it, basically. Leave me alone. Let me work on this.
It's kind of like, reminds me of one of the cuts on this album. It's a good day, This Good Day, where some of the lyrics are like, I got a song. And whether anybody hears it or not, you know, it's a good day. I got a song. Maybe he's living that through. I don't know.
Yeah, I think he is. I don't think there are too many things more important to him than a song right now.
Wow.
But I've always been that way too. And my brother, and I mean, it's so fun to see him. I told him, you haven't used up all your melodies yet. I feel like when I'm writing, I get bored with my own melodies sometimes. And he always has. He has a new one all the time, and
he
needs to ride that.
He does, but you know, I remember when Bob Dylan wrote an autobiography, I think it was, he wrote it a couple of years ago called Chronicles. He said, look, when I was young, I just wrote them down as fast as they came to me, and that's what he was doing back in the, he just couldn't write them down fast enough. And then as he got older, he had to learn how to write a song, because he'd never had to learn before. So he's looking for melodies and words, because it was so automatic for him, and he became a songwriter long after we all knew who he was. So I guess there's that transition. And maybe you can just always pull a melody. Would be the hardest part for me. I think I can do some words, but I could never do a melody. They don't come to me at all.
Did you see the interview with Joan Baez, where she was talking about that beautiful song that she recorded called Love Is Just a Four-Letter Word?
Yeah.
And she's riding down the road with Dylan. And he goes, that's a good song. Where'd you get that? You wrote that, dummy. He was writing so many songs.
Yeah,
that
they just flowed through it.
Can you imagine writing a song like that
and
not remembering it?
No.
That, I mean, that's That's why he's Bob Dylan,
well,
right?
Well, it is, and that, you know, Subterranean Homesick Blues, that's a, like, nothing repeats in it. It just goes on and on and on. He wrote that down as fast as he could, it, like someone was telling it to him, which I just think is hilarious. Anyway, good for Kelly that he's got that infection, we'll say, and he's picked it up from you and his Uncle Lee. So what the audience just heard, the album has 12 cuts on it. There are 4 with banjo. There are 5 with drums. There's some electric guitar with Guthrie Trapp on one cut, which is great. So you got 12 cuts. It's a great album. Everything is from within the band. Everything you've done on this is originated within the band. And I want to talk about what a difference a day makes, because that's one that you wanted to point out. But I mean, just overall, the album is it's all organic from the band.
Yeah. Well, we got together with Jerry Douglas. Jerry produced it, mm-hmm. which was a dream come true for us. But we had seen him at Merlefest, right after Mockingbird came out, and that was an electric record that we did back in 2018, and he walked up to us and said, "Good for you guys. I'm proud of you." He said, "If I had done the same thing my whole career, I would have gone crazy." And he knew that we loved bluegrass. I love bluegrass.
Yeah.
But he also knew there's folks out there that don't like it when a bluegrass act tries something different.
He's done that many times with that jazz album he did, which I love.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, as a matter of fact, I'm sorry to break your train here, but the year that Mockingbird came out, I was behind stage up top at Grey Fox because I wanted to see that set of your band doing Mockingbirds. I thought it was so great. And Jerry happened to be on the same that same evening set with his what I used to call his Guess What album, which was all the jazz stuff. But that Mockingbird was, I thought, I loved every minute of it.
Well, thank you. It was fun, you know. But so that kind of planted the seed a little bit for. But I'd always had it in the back of my mind. I'd love to work with that man. And we reached out to him, and he said, "I'd like to combine your different worlds here." He said, "I'd like to combine the bluegrass and more of a." But he also wanted, and Mockingbird was all original too.
Yeah.
But we wrote those songs, all of them, with Dan Arbach and different people.
Yeah. From the Black Keys.
Jerry wanted all of the songs that we had written and had not recorded. So there's new ones, there's old ones, there's some that are not so old or not so new, somewhere in between. We just sent him everything that we've written over the years, and he came up with a set of songs that he thought would kind of present us as singer-songwriters. And but, you know, that being said, What a Difference a Day Makes is the first thing we cut with him.
Okay.
And it came out, we hope, like a Jimmy Martin kind of stomping song.
Yeah. Yep.
That's what we were going for.
That's,
you know?
That's the one. There's 3 or 4 cuts. I'll say 4 that I have. I could say without question these are bluegrass. And not get an argument from the people that what is bluegrass, because I don't really care to talk to them about those arguments. To me, it's good music, and this is blue. I could say these songs, and they'd say, "Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right." So
I really love that cut, because it just, to me, it's a little rough around the edges. It's that unbridled joy that I feel when in the bluegrass that I love the best, and that's why I wanted to play that song.
It's interesting, because one of the things I was going to ask you, I thought about even asking it before we began our discussion for the broadcast, was I kind of felt like, but I didn't want to color any ideas in my head or pull you into anything. I kind of felt like The Darkest Hour was kind of like, I'll use Jerry's term, a culmination, not an ending movement, but I think if you look at what you did before Mockingbird and 2 albums before that, you did In the Ground right before that, and then right before that you did Brotherhood. So I remember talking to you about how that helped refine your harmonies, because you had to really go back and. But
yes.
But I think this album is all those things. This is not an ending point, but I think it is. I think Jerry had it right if he used those words to kind of like combine this electric sound that you had with Mockingbird with the bluegrass stuff. Some of these things could be Willie Nelson, the very last cut on it, This Good Day, could be like Willie Nelson singing it. I scribbled a bunch of notes. So that's great, though. So I wasn't just making it up. So I drive around listening to this. I think I'm very familiar with your music, and I'm very familiar with what the Gibson brothers are not afraid to do. So I kept thinking, yeah, this gives me that feel that here are, you know, it's been 5 years. Well, 2018 Mockingbird came out. So this is now 2023. So I think that's interesting. I kept thinking, is this what's happened? And then you've kind of confirmed for me that Jerry said, let's kind of put all these things together.
That's what he said. He said, I want to combine your worlds and present you as singer-songwriter. So, I really like your writing. And, you know, coming from that guy, that's affirmation, you know.
Did he play with you that year at Grey Fox? I know he was.
No, I wish he had. Yeah. No, he didn't. That was us,
plugging
in. And,
yeah,
and,
man.
I mean, I don't know. I look back at it and I think, gosh, we're either brave or stupid. I don't know.
That's one that I had asked. You know, I can come and go. They let bless God. Why they give me so much access, I don't know, but at Grey Fox. But I like to let them know that I want to be up on the side of the stage. And so they know why I'm there. And I said, I'm really here to see the Gibson Brothers. We had probably talked about it, and I wanted to see it. And then Jerry came on right after that, so I just stuck around right behind the curtain there. But that's what drew me to that lineup that night, was to see what I call the Mockingbird Band. It's a little bit different than the normal Gibson Brothers. But I think it's great that you stretch out a little bit. But you always come back. You always come back.
It was a lot of fun. You know, and we actually had a pretty good little head of steam going with it before the pandemic. But we've only done a few of those shows since we came back out of the pandemic. But I love to do it all. I love playing in a five-piece bluegrass band. I love playing in Mockingbird with drums and steel and Telecaster. But I also like going out with just my brother and our bass player. We've been doing quite a few trio shows also. And I think it's important for us moving forward to be open to whatever, you know, as far as being able to play different size venues. We've been doing more like theaters and stuff with the trio and smaller venues, and it's forcing me to play more acoustic guitar, and I feel exposed, but it's making me a better player. And sometimes, you know, in the smaller settings, it's like we've had people come up to us saying, geez, I never really paid attention to that lyric before. That song means something different to me than it did before. Or I've never noticed your harmonies like this before. So I don't know.
That's good.
I'll do whatever I can to keep this going.
Well, I think so. And we've talked a little bit about your what you pull from, and not just in regard to Mockingbird, but the Brotherhood. You had done an extensive search, even though everyone would say, well, the Gibson Brothers and bluegrass have some of the best brother harmonies. You guys went back and redug through all those things, and I've talked to you about it a couple times about how it kind of made you go back and rethink and made you a better harmony singer. And so, I mean, so you're always willing to go back and pull in, I'll say, the brothers. I'm talking to Eric Gibson, if you're just tuning in. The Gibson Brothers are always willing to go back, and whether it's all original stuff or combination, you're always willing to expand, but you always come back to, as on this album, I would say, I could throw a blanket over four of the cuts and they'd be bluegrass on anybody's book, but there's some of these, you have drums on five of these cuts. One of the songs I'm going to have you lead us into a little bit later, the Shut Up and Drive, I think, has drums and also has Guthrie Trapp on playing the electric guitar. But there's a very prominent drum on the very last tune, This Good Day. The drum kicks it off. So you've got drums on five cuts. You've got Jerry's everywhere. Jerry Douglas is everywhere, as is Justin Moses, who plays all sorts of things, as he always does. But so I think this is really works. I think this works on all those levels. And I don't mean to say, I don't think Jerry was trying to say that, hey, let's combine all the things you've done into one. It's just like, let's let the listener see all the things you've been working through and put them on an album. And now we've got this five-year gap with COVID and everything. It blends together so well. I want to ask you a little bit about how we got the arrangement, how we got the songs in this 1 through 12 lineup.
Well, so the songs that you're saying are the most bluegrass. They were done in March of 2020, right before or just as everything was shutting down.
Okay.
Uh, we were watching the news. We were looking at our phones. And my Lord, what is happening here?
Yeah. Now that's all changed.
My God. So we were in touch with Jerry's. Like, do you guys want to still come down? And he said, and we said, yes, if we can. And he said, let's make it our little cocoon here. We'll just stay together. We won't, you know, we went right from the studio right back to the hotel. And we were trying to be, nobody knew anything at that point. We were just trying to be as safe as we could. And, but we got into the sessions with Justin Moses and Eamon McLaughlin on fiddle and Jerry.
Great.
And we were working with Shawnee Gandhi. She's an awesome engineer. We were at the Sound Emporium, and after a few days, we said, you know, we need to get home. We don't even know what world we're living in right now. What's happening? Are we going to be able to get home? We didn't know. So we said, let's finish this at a later date. And so we cut. We headed home after cutting, I think, 6 songs. And we didn't get back for another year. We got back like 11 months later in early 21, and we got together at the late Bill Vorn Dix studio. And I think this might be the last album he ever worked on. What a joy to work with him, given that he had engineered some of our favorite albums, many that Jerry produced, but. And I can hear some of those tones, even though we did more of the stuff that was non-bluegrass with Bill. I can hear some of those tones that I heard on the early Alison Krauss stuff, you know, or Peter Rowland stuff that Jerry had worked on.
Yeah.
And because Bill Vorn Dix was all over that stuff. And so that we recorded 6 more songs, 6 or 7,
mm-hmm.
A year later. And that's Jerry combined them, you know. And we keep going back to that, combining our worlds. But I guess combining our experience.
That's better. And it's not stopped. It hasn't ended yet. I mean, but so let's just say to this point, but I know from talking to you, and I know how you and Lee, you look at things as to be not pulled in, but experienced. And to the extent that they could influence your songwriting or performing, and you like it, then it's good, then it's going to fit its way into the Gibson Brothers,
well,
I think, at some point.
I always, you know, I used to be a teacher. When I got out of college, I came out of college and was an English teacher for 4 years before the music pulled me away. I was just doing so much music that I didn't feel like I could do either justice, and I chose music. But I remember at the time hearing, you want to be a lifelong learner. Be a lifelong learner. I feel that way about music. I want to keep learning. I have my winter project right now. You might laugh at me, you know, but I'm really working on fingerstyle guitar. I've been messing around with that. You'd think I'd done more of that being a banjo player, but I haven't. So I've been putting John Prine on YouTube every night, playing along with him. Playing along with John Prine concerts. So I'm trying to learn, not just songwriting and singing. And I'm trying to better myself. And my brother and I have always had that, and Mike Barber, that approach. Let's never be satisfied. Let's learn all we can while we're here, and hopefully that shows.
Let's. I've taken you through general concepts, and we've talked about some of the albums, but I have asked you to do an intro into "I Feel the Same Way as You," which is a cut off of the album. Then I'm going to play that for the audience. I'll come back and we'll talk some more about it. Talking to Eric Gibson. Eric, kind of give me a little bit of an intro or what was behind "I Feel the Same Way as You," and then I'll play it for the audience, and you and I will chat a little bit.
This is one my brother wrote many years ago, and I don't know why we never recorded it. And so it was one of the songs that we sent Jerry, and he loved it. Loved it enough that he got Alison Krauss to sing harmony on it.
Yeah.
And that's why I chose this song, not just because she's one of the best singers ever, but because my brother's singing with her, and I don't think he takes a back seat. That's how much I think of his singing. I think that... you know you're a good singer when you're singing with Alison Krauss, I guess she could harmonize with the bumblebee and make it sound good. But
I was thrilled to hear her, and I say this often, and I'm not making this up. When I get ready for a show or a conversation with, I listen to the album before I start reading things on it because I want to see what grabs me. And I kept thinking, my gosh, is that Alison Krauss in the background? And it was. She's undeniable. All right.
Oh, Angel. I love her voice so much.
I'm glad to hear her back in this type of a recording. I mean, she's not gone away, but I'm glad to hear that Jerry pulled her in to put on this tune, which we're going to play through the audience. I'll be back to talk to Eric Gibson about Darkest Hour, which is on Bull Run. Same label as your son, right?
It's my label.
That's your label. All right. Well, all right. Well, that makes sense. All right, here it is. I feel the same way about you from the Gibson Brothers' brand new Darkest Hour. I'll come right back and talk to Eric some more. There for the audience, you heard had a nice intro there from Eric about I Feel the Same Way as You. This is the fourth cut on the album, and it just gets better and better. And I listen to all these things. Like right before that, one of the songs that I would say we could throw a blanket over this as bluegrass is So Long Mama. Now, the title is not saying goodbye to your mother or anyone's mother. It's getting shed of a woman.
Yeah.
God, if I can say it that way without being too crass.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one of my brothers.
Yeah.
That's one of my brother's quirky songs. And I love it, you know.
Who is, may I ask who Song for Annie Gray? That's not the title, but and parenthetically it says Song for Annie Gray. The name of the song is 1 Minute of You. But
yeah, my brother wrote that for his daughter. His daughter's name is Annie Gray.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And I love that song. I mean, I love all these songs. you shouldn't put them out if you don't love them all, right? But that one's special. That's a special song.
Okay.
And she's a special girl. She's gonna be graduating this year. I can't believe it. But she is near and dear to my brother's heart.
Good. That's the way it should be. That's the way my daughter is to me. And that's the way it should be. And you should always take, this is the editorial portion of the program. If you have children, if you're fortunate enough to have children in a family, always give them your time.
Yes.
There's nothing that you're doing now. Let's just take it all away, Eric. There's nothing you're doing now with your life that will never give you this time back. No matter how much you get ahead of what you're doing in a career, this time's never coming back. From when you're 13 or 14 or 15, you can say, I'm going to come back. But when you come back and you're 19, you don't get that time back again. So enjoy those times. Our daughter takes me to concerts, and I've always said, as long as she's going to ask me, I'll go. We decided years ago that instead of, I don't need stuff for birthdays and Christmas and holidays, she picks a concert and we go. And I'll do that till the day she stops thinking that Dad can get in the car and drive that long.
That's beautiful.
I
never said no to want to play catch, Dad.
Exactly.
Or, I have batting practice? There are times where I was dog tired, and I'm sure there are other areas where I failed. I'm sure there are, you know, but. I never say no to, hey, you want to write? Want to try to write one, Dad?
Yeah.
No. We're good. I will not say no to that.
And, you can't buy it back. You can't buy it back.
Yeah, exactly.
Your eyes say his name, and I'm just kind of bouncing through my list here. Also has drums. I have D's where everything has a drum, and B's where everything has a banjo. And I know that on Shut Up and Dance, I think that isn't that where Guthrie Trapp plays the. Electric guitar, and he also has
a drum. He does.
Yeah,
that's
a very upbeat song.
He's on several cuts. And what a beautiful player he is. He can rip off a bunch of notes, but he can just play one or two and find the right notes, you know, behind the vocal. And I really like how atmospheric his playing is.
That's a great, I can't say it any better than that. He has this very full, atmospheric. That's it. You nailed it.
And but that was a treat getting to play with him. And they're all Jerry's buddies. You know that's one of the things you get when you work with Jerry Douglas. He knows everybody.
Yeah.
You talk about having Alison Krauss on the record. Jerry could probably ask anybody and they'd say yes.
I'm sure they would. I'm sure. So it's a very upbeat. Shut Up and Dance is an up tempo tune and does have that electric sound and atmospheric. I'm going to steal that for the next time I talk to somebody that has an electric guitar that even comes close. But atmosphere is exactly what it is. Exactly what it is. Tell me a little bit about Shut Up and Dance, and I want you to get to Your Eyes Say His Name. But tell me a little about Shut Up and Dance. I'm not going to go through every song because I don't want to take you all day.
Oh, yet. Shut Up and Dance is one we wrote. We had a few days off between playing in Texas and Missouri. So we made our way to Nashville and spent a day with Pat McLaughlin, who's a wonderful singer, songwriter. You know, he spent years playing with Don Williams. And then towards the, probably the final decade of John Prine's career, Pat worked a bunch with John Prine, wrote a lot with him, played on the road with him. And we met him I met him years ago, but we had most recently hung out with him during the recording of Mockingbird. We wrote several songs with him. So we got together, and somehow that song came out, just kind of a funny little song, and it's one we've been doing in our live shows, and it's kind of as a change of pace song. Because, you know, you hear Darkest Hour, you think, oh, gosh, this is going to be a real sad album. But there's some hopeful, fun songs on it also.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And so you want to change it up a little bit.
Yeah. I wanted to come back and talk to Your Eyes Say His Name. The 10th. It also has drums on it. I'm not saying that as a bad thing. I'm just letting people know that there are different instruments. A lap steel. Jerry plays a lap steel on I think Shut Up and Dance. But anyway, tell me a little bit about Your Eyes Say His Name.
Yeah, that's one of Lee's. Your Eyes Say His Name. I don't know what prompted him to write that song, but I think that song. I wish John Anderson had cut that song. It sounds like a John Anderson song. I actually do play banjo on this song without picks. The only time I've ever done that in my career, Jerry said, I'd like for you to try to get that Herb Peterson banjo sound on, like you got on Heart Like a Wheel for Linda Ronstadt. And he didn't use any picks. Let's try that.
I played
that with no picks for the only time of my life. And at Jerry's behest. That's
interesting. Well, I wouldn't have known. I mean, I guess if I go back and listen that critically, but I wouldn't be able to tell right away. I could have thought you maybe playing away from the bridge more. And it just was.
You're the only person I've ever told this.
Oh, great! The secret.
It's the first. Yeah, but I haven't done it before or since.
Well, see, now you're doing finger picking on guitar, so maybe that opened a whole new level to you. You can take those picks off.
Well, when I'm playing the guitar I'm using finger picks.
Oh, okay,
I don't know if that's against the rules.
No. You know what I got recently, and the people are just going to have to listen to this for a second. I recently got something I'd always wanted, and I have banjo. I was playing banjo yesterday, just kind of waiting for the rain to stop and the football to begin. But I have a tenor guitar. Have you ever played around with any of those?
You mean like Ira? Didn't Ira Leuven play that on some stuff?
Maybe. I mean, it's four strings. It's got a shorter neck. I tune it like a plectrum banjo because there's no fifth string, so I know the chord shapes because I would never be able to.
Okay.
But it's kind of cool if you just want to have like a guitar sound.
I bet.
They're just kind of neat just to try one out sometime. I got one recently. I think, I just thought they were neat looking. And since I can tune it like a banjo without the fifth string, I kind of got a good shot at chord shapes, I think.
I'm into trying any of that kind of stuff. I actually played some classical guitar on my son's album recently, and just on one cut because I was pretending to be Willie. It was so fun. It was it recorded so well. It's my brother. It's not an expensive guitar at all. Just one my brother had lying around, and it had kind of old strings on it, and it was sounding so good at the house. I said, I'm just not going to change the strings. And it recorded really well. And my brother's like, you should have changed the strings.
I don't think you have to. On those,
it sounded great.
Yeah,
really great.
Do you play with a flat pick? Let me ask you that first.
Yes, I did.
All right.
Yeah,
see, because I've always thought that that's why Willie's guitar is just torn to pieces is that, you know, there's no pick guard on most of them that I see. And he's playing with a pick. And he's strumming and beating the heck out of what is it, pretty sensitive. He at least has the strap that goes through the hole up around your neck because the necks have no rod in them, so you can't put a lot of stress on them. But I always thought he beats
the guitar. One of my favorite guitar players.
It's very distinctive.
I know. I've heard years ago, somebody, I don't even remember where I read it, but they were kind of making fun of his guitar playing. What are you listening to? The man has a style. And I got to see him live a couple years ago. And here he is at the time in his late 80s And he was playing the most inventive stuff in between his vocal lines, and it just, I loved it.
If you just tuned in, I'm talking to Eric Gibson. Now we're just kind of off topic. We wanted to talk about Darkest Hour. That was my fault. No, that was my fault because I said, here's another thing. So let's talk about Willie Nelson for a minute. Larry Sparks, to me, is a great guitar player, but he's kind of focused, and he's even told me once, it's kind of like B.B. King. If you just play the one note with more feeling, you don't have to play like Tony Rice. If you could, everybody on the planet would try it. But I mean, Larry Sparks is a very good guitar player, but he's just decided that I'm going to do that. He mentioned B.B. King once. We're talking about his style, and that's what he does. Just real, a lot of emphasis, a lot of tremolo type of on the string and the note, and that's his style. And Willie Nelson has his style, and it's very recognizable.
There's really something to that. You know, you think about. We all have the same instruments. We all got the same tools in the box, right?
Right, pretty much.
But so many just want to sound like their hero. And what would my hero do? Which is great. You have to have that stock of licks.
You got to start, yeah.
But wouldn't it be nice if more people would let their personality come out and their individuality? Maybe they are. Maybe I'm just not hearing it. But it feels to me like, we've all been guilty of that. There's so few that just throw it out. This is who I am, and I'm sure Willie's tipping his, he's paying homage to Django, but he's not Django Reinhardt. He's his own. And I don't know.
I agree with you. No, I think it takes a lot of certain kind of bravery to go there and try to master it. You got to have the technique, and I guess have the, like you said, the tools. But then try to find your own sound, and it's definitely worth going after and trying to locate it. And I'm glad that you're pursuing that with the.
Well, I'm not saying I've come close.
No.
When you think about Larry Sparks, that's a perfect example of somebody who's who Larry is as soon as before he even sings.
But first guitar note, you know it's Larry Sparks. Yep.
And how many can you say that? There are very few. I mean, it's really a brilliant thing.
That's what he says. B.B. King. Think about it. He said, B.B. King. I'm the B.B. King. I thought, okay, I get it. Once he said that, I got it because I'm a big fan of B.B. King. But once he said that, I thought, yeah, that's Larry Sparks doing his own thing, and nobody else does it like him.
Somebody walked up to Larry Sparks. He was tuning his guitar, and Larry just stopped and said, I'm sorry, I'd rather hear you tune your guitar than hear most of these guys pick.
What a good, he's one for the ages. I mean, he's just never miss him. I don't when he comes near enough that I can travel to. It's just great. He's just a great guy too.
We were hosting the IBMA Awards the year.
I was there when he was inducted.
I'm the first person he sees as he comes off the stage, and he gave that performance, and you could tell he was walking on clouds. He was happy. He was in the moment. You know, he was, of course, and. But the first thing he says to me is, what do you think of me now? I said, Larry, I love you. I've always loved you, and I love you. I love you even more now.
That was Allison was on stage with him, too, as I recall, that she was part of it. Yeah, that was
she
fun.
Was.
Those
are
great. You guys did a great job, by the way. I thought your banter back and forth, I know you practiced it because I see you practicing that morning of, but you guys did a great job, I thought. Just
thank you. That was pretty. That's kind of a tough thing to do.
I guess so.
But my mother kind of stole the show, I thought. We got her to come down, and her, that was my favorite moment of that show was my mom. We did a little skit. She showed her humor, I thought, and we got more compliments on her than on what we did. That's all we heard. Sam Bush, everybody, like, boy, your mom was great.
you can tell her that or not, or maybe she just knew it anyway. I don't know.
She did great.
She did great. It was good. It was great. You guys did a good job. I haven't talked to Eric in a while, and I knew this would happen. I knew it would get a little bit of off kilter, but that's what I want it to be because. I haven't talked to you in a while, and I just like to see all these things in your mind and in Lee's mind and what the band's doing, and you helped me put a good kind of a framework on maybe where you are when you did this, and you'll change, you'll do other things. You said you've been doing trio shows and smaller venues, and so I'm sure that you'll keep doing it. But I want you to – you picked out a song. We've talked about most of the songs and certainly the feel on just about everything, but you had wanted to go out. with I Go Driving, which, by the way, I for some reason, I think that song's for me. I know it's not, but I keep thinking about the times that I don't know what it is about. And I'll be more literal. I think it could be more expansive, but I'll be more literal just for my purposes. Driving at night is just like, you know, unless it's raining and snoring, it's kind of like it does have that make you reflect a little bit. And I think it applies to bigger things, but I'm just saying as it applies to my listening, I hear that right away if I want to have my ego involved in it.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I mean, this song is one of my favorites that I've written. I'm not going to lie. You know, my brother loves it. And it just came so quickly. I wrote this during the pandemic in between our recording sessions. I remember I told you we had the album in 2020. And this is right after everything shut down and I didn't have a job. I didn't know how are we going to make a living? How are we going to do this? So everything's closed. I'm non-essential. What am I going to do? I was very out of sorts. So I got in the car and I just went for a drive. It was nighttime and I live about 15 miles from where I grew up. So I put on Willie's Roadhouse. I was listening to old country music and I was driving around those old farms where I grew up, and most of them are not in good shape, you know. But I was driving, these old Don Williams songs were coming on, and Willie Nelson, people I love, and I was pretending, you know, it was dark enough that I could look at the outlines of those farms and pretend that they were booming, and that was back in the day when things were good, and my heart was full, you know.
Well, you have a line about the farms, and you have a line about your dad.
Yeah, yeah. And so I made my way home, and that song started coming in my head. And I never write at night. I've only written a handful of songs, and all the songs I've written, of all the songs I've written at night. And my wife met me at the kitchen door and started talking. I said, "Babe, I can't talk. I got to go. I got to go upstairs." And I went upstairs and grabbed my guitar, and I came down about 20 minutes later with that song. And they don't always come that way, but that one did.
When they're there and they're knocking at the door, you have to be receptive to them, and you have to have the skill to go pull it off. And I love the song. I love the song for all my own personal reasons, but I understood the parts that applied to your specific experience. I got all those things because I know you. I know the farm had to be let go. We've talked about those issues, and it pops up in other songs, and I know that whole area has changed. So I was in your head as you're driving. I knew what you're talking about, but it also, I think it.
In your own.
Yeah. I think it applies. So, all right, Eric Gibson, I'm gonna let you go. We've been talking to Eric Gibson about the Gibson Brothers' newest release, Darkest Hour. There is a song on the album that's called My Darkest Hour and has your banjo in it, but I'm gonna leave that for later. It's a great album on Bull Run. We talked a little bit about the fact that your son Kelly has an album. We're going to talk to Kelly in the future. I'll let him build up to it. I'll sneak him some questions through you so he won't have to come on blindside. You're a pro at this, Kelly. You're a pro at this. Let's do this. I'll let Eric Gibson go, and he's told you about I Go Driving. Let's play that, and then you go on about your way, man. I appreciate your time so much. You're always a welcome guest, and I'm always happy to chat with you just about whatever.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Eric. I'll talk to you later.
See you, Steve.
Bye.